Welcome to the Jack and John podcast.
I'm Jack.
And I'm John.
And we're on a mission
to help you focus on Christ. Well, you know, we love having special guests, and sometimes you just have to scour the world to find the right people.
Or they may be right under your own roof.
This is true.
Yeah.
Well, we have the most special guest today because this is my favorite worship leader and singer, and my daughter, Julia. She's a full-time worship leader at Traders Point Christian Church North in Carmel. And one of the things that Jack and I like to do is we like to interview people who are in ministry and just talk to them about their experience, about what Jesus means to them. And here we are. So, Julia, welcome.
Thanks. I got whiplashed. I've heard you guys do that intro, and I was like, watching back and forth.
That's
thank
great.
You. I'm glad to be here.
I'm so glad you came. You know, when you ask your daughter to do something like this, it kind of puts you on the spot, makes you a little nervous, I think. And
more comfortable when there's lyrics.
And I apologize for that. Yeah, we don't have, what do you call those?
Confidence monitors.
We don't have a confidence monitor, although I do have my phone with my little cues on here. So, well, obviously, with worship leader, we want to talk about worship. But first, I would like to hear from you. How would you describe Jesus to someone who's never heard of him?
Yeah.
That's a big question.
I read that question and it kind of spiraled, and I was like, you know, I don't know if I've ever met anybody who hasn't heard of Jesus, which maybe that says something about me, but I don't know. I think, you know, you can look at the whole Trinity or you can look at the person of Jesus. And so if I'm describing the person of Jesus, I'm going to say, well, he's a man who knows me fully, loves me fully, and made me, has the power to destroy me, but chooses to be kind and merciful. I think that'd be my intro. It's like, how do you explain Jesus?
Pretty profound. Yeah, it's good.
I think that's great, the power to destroy me, but he chooses to be kind to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think it actually, to me, even goes a step farther than that, because I don't think that it's as much he chooses to be kind as that's his very nature.
Mm.
Because when you fall in love with someone, it's not really that you choose to love that person.
But he did choose us.
Well, he chose us.
Yeah.
Yes, he did. But like when I fell in love with my wife, Julia's mom, I didn't really make a choice. It wasn't like, I'm going to love her. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. No, it's like these emotions, these thoughts, these things come over you. And even more so with your child, okay? Nobody has to decide, I think I'm going to love my child.
Oh, I don't know. Sometimes.
I'm talking about at the beginning. At the beginning, you know, you ask people, why do you want to have a kid? Nobody says, I want to have a teenager.
Every day I would get up and say, are they going to be my kid today? You know, I had a saying while they were a teenager, my son, I would say, you know, I can take you out and make another one just like his.
Oh, my goodness.
Be careful.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm looking at Jesus in a different light now. Wow. But no, love, it does. It's sort of makes the choice for you. It's like when he says he looked on the crowds and he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. That's not a feeling that you decide you're going to feel that way. That's part of your nature and who you are. So yeah, he is kind to us and he loves us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you don't have to totally agree with your dad today.
Not at all.
I think it'd be fun to
not at all.
Take the other side.
Noted. Yeah. I do agree, though.
So, aside from Jesus, who in the Bible has had the greatest influence on you?
That is so impossible. I think I kind of have to say Paul, just because he wrote like a lot of the New Testament, and the New Testament is really what got me. Old Testament's a little more complex to understand, but I think looking at his letters, specifically Corinthians, I think that has been the most shaping, and Romans, good night. Yeah, just all of them. The whole Bible's great. I think it's 2 Corinthians 4, where he's talking about the treasure in jars of clay, and we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. And that has really been a formative verse for me. Because it's like, I'll remember my first car, I totaled it, and I was devastated. It was beautiful. I called her Foxy Roxy. She was a red Jeep Grand Cherokee, and I loved her so much, and Dad bought her for me, and then I totaled her because I turned left on an icy road. And
after I told you to go the other way.
Yeah, after you told me, yeah, it was very, very much like, okay, Dad, I am,
I have a granddaughter that names her cars, by the way, so I'm wondering if this is a young female thing to personalize your
car. I've named all my cars.
Oh, okay. Never named a car.
But anyway, I remember being in the choir room, I think because that's when I learned that it was like totaled, the choir room at school. And I called you sobbing. I was like, Dad, I'm so sorry. Like, I was just very, very upset and emotional because it was my first car. And, you know, I know it's expensive. And you're like, it's just money. Well, it always comes and it always goes. I was like, oh, okay. And so then I think about this verse, though, that, goodness, what did I even just say? What we see is temporary and what is unseen is eternal.
Right.
And that has formed me.
Yeah, so true. And, you know, it's amazing because we do, especially in our culture, we get so focused on the material and on costs, and it's easy to do. The reality of it is, I mean, money is just a tool, and it's not eternal. It's not going to last. It's like lighting a fire with paper. I mean, it burns up and it's gone. And the things that last are people, our relationships. And we've talked about this before. You know, when we were in Haiti and we were talking about storing up treasures in heaven. Mm-hmm. Those treasures don't mean material things. The reason the streets are made of gold is because gold doesn't matter in heaven. It's not because, oh, this is a wealthy palace and we got gold. No, it's because it doesn't matter. We were in India.
Well, the gold is the gravel in it.
Right.
Yeah.
It's right.
And it's a pretty snazzy gold because it's transparent gold.
I made,
it's even better than what we ever have seen.
I made the comment when we were on our mission trip in India that all the floors in the hospital and in the buildings at the mission, they were all made of marble. And I said, why do you guys use marble? You know, because here, that's a big deal. So, it's the cheapest thing.
Well, you know, their floors are made of cow dung.
Well, there's that.
In India. Yeah. Which threw me to that interesting thought that these things don't matter. That, you know, anything that would be materialistic don't matter.
Yeah.
Like being in heaven and seeing those things. But.
So
what
treasures.
About David? I was thinking, you know, as a musician, and
that's a good point. I just
wonder what your thoughts on David and the Psalms are.
I think David is. We would be in I'd be really sad without David, because he makes it okay to be your whole self with God. Because you see him turning the corner, and he's like, God, why? Mm-hmm. But I'll trust you. It's like this back and forth. And sometimes I get really emotional and shocker. And I'm like, why? And really confused. And don't be downcast, oh my soul. Suddenly I'm like getting back to this place of remembering, no, this is who your God is. This is who he's called you to be. This is, and like the David does such a good job of like being able to be real, but then also remember your God. Isn't that something I talk about all the time, like at church when I'm leading moments, like we're here to remember Like, let's get our eyes back on Jesus. Let's look at him again. Let's remember who he is. Because when you're going throughout your week, you have to continually look to Jesus. You can get caught up in the things and your whatever your job is or whatever's going on at home. But you have to look at Jesus because all those other things are going to fade. They are.
Do you have a favorite psalm?
Favorite psalm? 139.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You made me in the...
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
knit just, me together in my mother's womb. I'm fearfully and wonderfully
yeah,
made.
Yeah, you've searched me and known me.
Yeah.
And I think heard it said, to be known is to be loved. Mm. To be loved is to be known. And I think that's very true. But I think that one is just like the hyperbolic language of like, if I go to the highest height or the deepest depth, like there's nowhere I can hide.
Good.
Yeah.
David teaches us so much about the heart of God, because if we just looked at him as a political leader, he wouldn't survive in today's culture because of all the things that he's done, you know, all the scandals and just the horrific mess that his family is, and even how he was chosen as king. You know, you go from having Saul, who's taller, a head taller than most of the Israelite men, and everything about him was external and power.
Yeah, by the way, that's the first time that a shampoo is mentioned in the Bible. Saul was a head and shoulders among. Go ahead, finish your thought there, John. You can use that one, John, and I know you will, because that's his kind of joke.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. So, but then you get David, who was the least likely, because he's the shepherd boy. He's out in the field. They didn't even have him line up when Samuel comes through to look at Jesse's sons, and he's like, no, none of these are it. You got any more kids? There's the shepherd boy, and here's your anointed king. And he tells us right there, and this should have been the foreshadowing moment for us. He says, man looks at the outside. Mm. God looks at the heart.
Right.
And what he saw in David is very different than what we would see. And where you really see it with David is in the Psalms. Mm-hmm. He pours his heart into the Psalms. And I think it gives hope to all of us because if that guy has a heart after God, you know, the guy who steals a man's wife, has him killed, all that stuff, but then comes to God with a broken and contrite heart, we all have a chance.
That's
then.
Right. That's where we all stand.
You know, we all have a chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, we talked about Paul, who wrote most of the New Testament. We talked about David, who has a great influence in terms of the writing. Let me ask you this, Julia, as a worship leader. What does worship mean?
Oh, man. So much. And it's so simple. To love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. I think of Romans 12 when it talks about offering your bodies as living sacrifices. And like, this is your spiritual act of worship. It's unfortunately become so much about music on Sunday, but that's not what the Bible describes. That's great. And obviously I love that. It's my job. worship is a lifestyle, and it's, like I said, it's continually looking to Jesus and like letting him form you, letting him correct you, refine you, and mold you into the person he created you to be. I gave a talk once to our worship team and talked about how to be a living sacrifice. In that verse, Paul is talking, he's referencing a burnt offering, which is the only type of sacrifice where the entire animal was burnt and sacrificed. And that's what Paul is saying we are supposed to be, like, let him burn up all of you that isn't like him. And so, in a way, worship is staying on the altar, like, being alive on an altar, and, like, offering your life as a sacrifice. And so it's dying to yourself, every day when, you know, when mom wants me to do dishes and I'm wanting to play my video games. I'm going to do dishes because I want to die to myself. You know, like it's whatever that might look like. But yeah, I just think it's important that we remember it's not just singing songs, but that is an incredible part of it.
But the music is important because to me, what worship does collectively when you're together and you're singing is it pulls me in emotionally. It erases and nullifies distractions. It's like getting recentered and refocused. It's almost like a meditation. For your soul and your heart, because when I'm singing in worship, I'm setting my mind on Christ and letting everything else go aside.
Yeah.
And that's my goal, my focus. And if when I'm leading worship, this is a hard part because I like to sing and I like to do stuff with my voice, but when I'm leading worship, I need to get out of the way. Mm-hmm. I need to be transparent. Mm-hmm. I don't want people focusing on, oh, wow, he can sing. Mm-hmm. I love that. You know, no, you want that to be a channel for them so that they can be, you know, what I described when you're singing in the congregation, you can be focusing on Christ and forgetting the things around you. We talked about where worship first appears in the Bible, and that's in Genesis
22.
Yeah, and and it's very much like what you said with Romans 12, because it's when Abraham has taken Isaac up into the region of Moriah, and he says to the servant, "You stay here. My son and I are going to worship." And what's he doing? He's offering his son as the sacrifice.
He's going to.
Thanks for not doing that to me, by the way.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. That's true worship.
Yeah.
Julia, I think what you said to me is really profound, that you picked up the sacrificial nature that we have to present ourselves to God in so that we can enter into his presence. And it's similar, I think, when the priest would prepare himself to enter into the Holy of Holies. And I think if we flippantly come before him, we've kind of missed a part of, at least we as worship leaders, I think, should present to God and to the people. What, this is not on the page, this is just out of my head, but where do you see the performance that obviously has to happen? When you present music, you've got musicians, you've got singers, and there is an aspect of performance to it. How do you balance the performance part of what you do with the presenting yourself to God as a living sacrifice and then coming into his presence in true worship and bringing other people in with you?
Absolutely. That's a great question. Yeah, because that's, I mean, I work at a big church, and that's a criticism, you know, is we can easily get is, oh, it's like a rock concert. Why do we have all the lights? You know, like, and yeah, I think there's a lot of variables here. One is you absolutely cannot outshine God. He's going to be, he's like, if you think that you doing a thing that's really cool in worship is going to get in the way of God getting to someone's heart, that's crazy, because if he wants to, he will. But I think it also means you have to be so intentional in your prayer life, preparing for sets, even through the set. Like you're it's momentary obedience, and I'm in this moment, and I'm like, I melodically, my head is spinning, and you know, there's all these, I'm like, oh, I could do this little run here, but it's like I'm listening, and if he's like, no, keep it simple right here. Okay, I'm going to keep it simple. And I think it's obedience. And sometimes you do the fun thing musically, and that is what connects somebody. And sometimes it's, no, let's keep it simple, because so-and-so's grandma is here. I mean, I don't know this, but the Lord knows. So-and-so's grandma's here, and she just needs a simple melody right now. But I think it's you have to keep listening. And I will say a lot of worship leading is listening to God, to the room, to your team, so much of it. And we talk a lot on our like staff team about like we want to read the room, and we want to bless the Lord, we want to read the room, and we want to bring the room with us. And it's not about us doing a thing. It's honestly one of the things that makes me squirm the most is when somebody in the lobby is like, "I just thank you for singing. You sing so well." I'm like, "Did you meet with God?"
You know what I learned a long time ago?
Yeah.
Just say thanks.
Oh, I do. I do. Yeah. I won't ever push back on a person because yeah. I know that probably means that they did. Yeah. They had a good moment.
It's okay.
But
sometimes it like, means they want to encourage you.
Yeah, that's it does. True. It does.
Some people shouldn't be told that. But how about, which kind of leads me to another thought, how about the words, the message that you're singing? Are you concerned about the music being written, the songs that you're presenting?
1,000%. I just got goosebumps when you said that. We've talked about songwriting as a team, and that's one of the most intimidating and exciting things. But even outside of songwriting, it's like being in a position to make a decision that affects the words people say to God. Oh my goodness, it's weighty. And I'd never want to take that for granted. And so we think this is one of the beautiful parts about working on a team of worship leaders is you can't be biased because we're all like, one of us will always disagree and be like, "I don't know about that one." There's one song that we really love. I'm not going to name it, but there's a part, it's just talking about like, God can do anything kind of thing. But then there's one line where it says, "I will do this thing," but it's like, no, God will do that. And so we've not done the song because we're like, that's not okay. Mm-hmm. And we have to do that. We absolutely have to do that because people walk away and they might remember something the pastor said and they might remember the heart of the message, but they're going to know song.
They might sing that song again and again.
They're going to, and it's going to get stuck in their head while they're doing dishes, and that's going to form their theology. And it's terrifying. In a good way.
One of the things that I like that I've seen that you guys have done in your church is, and there's a criticism, a lot of times people that are really clinging to the hymns, mm-hmm. they're not, some of that is nostalgic.
Sure.
And it's not necessarily because the hymns are better or this kind of thing, but I've seen some hymns where it's not really a worship song. It's more of an education moment. And
when you bring your Ebenezer.
Yeah, and I'm not saying
that's a word in a hymn.
I'm not saying that's bad, but that's not really helping me as a person in the congregation draw toward God and focus on God. And the thing I've liked about what you've done with your worship team is you guys work to make sure that these songs are God-focused, that they are worship songs, and that they're not so much, you know, just a fun-sounding song that's like about Jesus, but that you're singing for him, to him. And that, to me, is part of what really makes it worship. Mm-hmm. And it's not, to me, about this cultural relevance or singing for an audience or for the congregation, but it's about trying to engage the congregation and bring them into the worship.
Right.
And continue growth.
Right.
Even spiritual growth with, the Bible says, sing a new song unto the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I like to be connected to a place, to a time, you know, with the old hymns.
Mm-hmm.
But I like learning a new song so that my worship can grow and not be kind of stuck in one place.
I have a couple thoughts. One being, one of my favorite facts about hymns is that a lot of them were like parodies to bar songs.
Right.
Sure. A Mighty Fortress Is Our God.
And it's like
German bar songs.
People think that these are like these, I mean, they are sacred, but but they get upset when we bring an electric guitar in, and I'm like, this is just what we do. We do the music that makes sense in the time we're in. I also, ADHD is the worst.
We're related.
But We've been talking as a staff a lot about the tabernacle and the steps in the tabernacle to get to God. And obviously Jesus tore the veil. And so it's like, okay, well, there's shortcut. At least now we have Jesus and you don't have to do the outer court, the inner court and all the things. But there is a lot of significance, I think, in studying that and knowing like why the priests did the things that they did. And there's, you know, the laver and we're cleansing and we're washing with the water of the word. We're inviting the Holy Spirit to come and move and creating space even for people to just have a moment with God. And that's something I've recently become very passionate about because life is crazy and busy and fast. And I take time to say that on stage. I'm like, right now you're here. You're not going anywhere. Just let's just sit with Jesus for a second. I'm going to give you this moment. And then I just step back for a second, let them sit. And like meditate or whatever, and then we continue to worship. And I think that's
21st century people aren't used to being still and quiet.
No.
Meditating, preparing to worship.
Yeah,
I like that, Julia.
Yeah.
I as a singer and as a person who's really drawn to music and loves music, I always want the worship to keep going. I want it to be a bigger part.
Yeah.
And I do love worship night that you guys do because the whole thing is worship. And I think that's beautiful. When I was a kid growing up, the singing was just sort of the prelude to the sermon. And I certainly can't think of it that way anymore because to me, the sermon is often very good, but sometimes just there, and I'm really there for the worship and the engagement.
Let me give you my lofty opinion here,
okay.
And just wow you here. And I know we're drawing down kind of to our time, but I know that being a pastor in a church and doing church ministry all my life, you know, that people would say there's these aspects to the church ministry. And there may be five of those, you know, evangelism, edification, worship. And a lot of people would say that evangelism is the central focus of the church. I've always disagreed with that. I believe that worship is the central, should be the central focus of the church because everything flows from your worship. If I am not right with God, then my evangelism will not be in the right place and won't be as prolific as it should be. Because when I am surrendered, when I am nothing, when I understand the preeminence of God and his place in my life and in this world, it is worship that brings me to that knowledge and understanding, and then everything else can flow from that. That's my opinion. I've been disagreed with, and that's okay. But it's so very important. And I would just say, Julia, I really appreciate you, your heart, your knowledge, your wisdom, everything you bring. I've been very, very blessed by what you know and what you're sharing. And I'm glad we had you on. It is really, really a joy for me. And I remember the little girl that was too shy to come around from behind her mama to say hi to the old man that walked into her house. But now she's quite prevalent in presenting yourself a person of God and a servant for him. So thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much. Guys, we hope that our words today inspire you to be that living sacrifice and to present yourself to God in worship and in humility. We love you so much. Thank you for being part of us and being here with us. Thanks again, Julia, for joining us, and we'll see you guys next time.